Nation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we take a deep dive into critical issues facing Prince George's County. My guest is County Council Vice Chair and District 6 Council Member Walla Blagay. She's answering our questions and yours about a wide variety of topics. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a comment or question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilmember Blagay, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's dive right into some of the top stories that are facing the county right now. As you know, there was a deadly shooting at a strip club on Chilham Road overnight. The county has shut it down for improper permitting. But obviously, this is a very troubling thing. This isn't the only establishment of its sort, in the county. And we know that there was kind of a change about 7 years or so regarding a permitting of gentlemen's clubs. Your thoughts on just on this event, this incident from last night?
Well, I wanted to overall, it's unfortunate that this happened, but the reality is that this is not just a gentleman club's issue. This is just the increase of crime that we're seeing in our community. I would tell you this, in my district, I have attended way too many funerals. There has been shootings at some of the clubs in my district. There has been shootings near schools. There has been shootings even in clubs. In the residential clubhouses in my district, and it's one too many. So I would say this: I had a huge public safety forum in February due to the fact that there is just anxiety throughout Prince George's County, and especially in our communities. Let me just say this: we are noticing trends, and one of the things we're trying to do is tap into what can we do to stop the trends. Crime is rising throughout the country. But in Prince George's County, what we're finding is that there's always been crime in Prince George's County. There are hotspots everywhere. However, crime is not just going on in hotspots. It's going on in gentlemen clubs. It's going on in the schools. It's going on in gated communities. So we're just having an increase in ways that we had not accustomed to. And so what we're trying to do is look at ways to address it. One of the ways is places that encourage criminal activity. If you notice them, you taking away a permit at the gentleman's club is one way. If you notice in my district, there was Walter's Lane. A couple months and late last year, kids got off a bus and a dead body was at the gas station, at the BP gas station. And one of the things that we talked about was there was a nuisance and abatement hearing subsequently, because many people say it's a drug market at the BP gas station and they don't feel comfortable. Same with probably this gentleman's club where something happens, someone gets shot and everyone says, I don't feel comfortable going inside of this club. There are multiple things that we're doing. Number one is budget season. We're looking at increasing our police. The reality is that it's not actually a budget issue because we didn't actually add any money to, and when you see the county executive's budget, we didn't add any money for more FTEs. The reality is that we're having
FTEs,
as in full-time employees, okay, and things like that. And I'm sorry, I'm so used to using
the
word.
I understand. That's what all the government folks do, but please continue.
But the reality is we're having a really tough time recruiting police officers. Around 75%, it would shock you, of our police officers don't live in Prince George's County. That's number one, a problem. So what we need to do is get our police officers. People talk about community policing. You can't do community policing until you actually bring the people who actually patrol our streets to live in the county. Now, some people say they can't afford it. So we're looking at incentives to get more police officers to live in Prince George's County. Number two, we're having a hard time with recruitment. They say a high number of police officers don't even stay 5 years. The national discussion about law enforcement has gotten to the point that many of our young people are not looking to become police officers. So we got to turn that around. We have hundreds of openings right now. And the reality is that police can't be everywhere. So now you're going to see random shootings in places where maybe if there were police presence there, there wouldn't be a gunshot. There wouldn't be any homicides. Our highest number of crime is actually property crime. Mm-hmm. Homicides are not as high as people think, but they're generally more, there's more media coverage if there's a shooting. But the reality is that for one shooting, there are probably hundreds of those that were car robberies, things like that. Most of the perpetrators in that area are young people.
Let me ask you a question about the police issue. Would you support a residency requirement for new hires?
Yeah. So, say that again.
Would you support a residency requirement for new police hires?
Well, we're looking at really in incentives, because many of our police officers are saying that it's not that they don't want to live in the county, is that simply some of them, it just, you know, it's a high cost of living, and they can go into and get more elsewhere. So we are actually looking, exploring that right now, what incentives that we can do now. We are looking, there has to be something that legislatively, will it be sort of residency requirement? We're looking at some incentives. I know District of Columbia has an incentive for those who live in the actual district, making sure that they have first opportunity to work for the district government. And we would consider the same thing, especially with the police force, because we do want people to live in the county. And, you know, if we have a recruitment issue, we definitely want to make sure that we're looking first at those who live here.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I am talking to the Prince George's County Vice Chair of the County Council, also the District 6 Council Member, Walla Blagay. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Jonathan, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jonathan, are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
My name is Jonathan, and I really would like to speak on this issue because I have a barbershop over here in District Heights, Maryland, and I'm one of the activists out in this community trying to establish some type of rapport with these young guys and out here that's doing crime and little gangs and stuff. But one of the things I have a problem with, man, is that the police, they sit in their cars, they on their telephones, instead of getting out their cars, walking these beats, walking these streets, walking these infested areas where they know that these guys are out there doing what they're doing. Just like these little 24-hour tobacco stores. They're popping up everywhere in our town, everywhere in our city.
Hey, Jonathan, I get it. I want to see if we can get the council member to address that, and we are going to be talking about the tobacco stores a little bit later in this conversation. But thank you so much for your comment. Go right ahead, council member.
One of the things is that I understand the concern. I have heard the same concern about police officers in a car. We have brought that to the attention of the chief. The chief said that they're working diligently to make sure they address some of the crime issues. When we talked about the Walters Lane issue, which is off of, you know, in the District Heights community, one of the things that was brought to our attention is that the police were there, but they were in the car. Now, some of this is off-duty police officers being hired to work, and so there is a lack of control that we have with those. However, we are working with our law enforcement to make sure that there's collaboration, making sure that people feel comfortable that if the police shows up, they don't feel that the police is just hiding in the car. I would say tobacco stores, where I know we're going to talk about that, but I wanted to address that now. We have noticed the oversaturation of tobacco stores that are popping up everywhere. We do believe that there might be some interest in them trying to get into the cannabis industry that's coming. And we are actually working with our lobbyists on a cannabis reform bill, the cannabis adult use bill that's actually in the state right now. We even had a briefing today from our lobbyists talking about, we are concerned about oversaturation. So for tobacco stores, one of the couple things that we did, first of all, we just passed a bill, and actually should be in effect now because it takes 45 days. For that bill, we don't want 24-hour tobacco stores anymore. which was has been some of the problems that we they should not be open 24 hours. They also should not have the blinking lights, those neon lights that we see oftentimes with the tobacco store, which are a nuisance in the community, making sure that we remove that. Also, they have to move into industrial zone. Now, legally, we can't just immediately shut them down, but we have to give them a time period, and the time period is 2 years. So with 2 years, they would have to move into the industrial zone out of the residential communities. So I know some people are frustrated that it will take a while. However, it's you know, there are legal requirements that we do have. We just introduced a bill recently, and I was the lead sponsor of that bill, making sure that we catch all tobacco stores. Some of these tobacco stores are coming into our community as more convenience stores, and then they start to put tobacco signs up. So we want to make sure we change the definition of a tobacco store so we have a catch-all, and that helps us with our enforcement, our code enforcement, DPI, to make sure that if a tobacco store has to come in a community, the definition is very narrow, that they would have to have a special exception to be there anyway.
I want to talk to you also about what happened today at the county council meeting. Jonathan spoke about making connections with young people. You had at the county council meeting something called a student takeover today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that what these young people were speaking about was primarily public safety. What was your message to them, and what is it that they were most concerned about?
Crime, really. We had the state's attorney, we had the sheriff's office, we had the chief of police there talking about just sort of crime, giving advice to our students, which I was very happy to hear. And I got to give the credit to Councilman Barrows, who really put that together and brought students from Crossland, Friendly, and Oxon Hill, who came, and mostly a lot of Crossland students came, and they asked questions. What the state's attorney made it clear is that getting involved with certain things, certain crimes, can have a really big consequence, and actually ask the students to guess what the actual consequences are. How much time would you have in jail? What would happen? So it was good, because sometimes students need to hear that. If you're around a bunch of kids that are involved with drugs or violence, it's really good for the students to have to even strategically think, what could be the outcome of that if you're involved? And I was proud to see that. And also, one of the things a student brought up that I was impressed with is there is a whole issue of safety on the roads. And I don't know if you saw that. There's been a lot of accidents in my community near Richie Marlboro.
You and I actually spoke about that after the unfortunate death of one of the students there. But please continue.
So what we're focused on is making sure that we're focused on making sure that we make our roads safer, putting street lights on the roads, making sure that we, around Wise High School, we don't want any accidents. And that's what the young girl brought forth, is like, if students are driving, I mean, we don't want them to be in an area that they could actually get killed, which is what happened when we lost a young girl, Kaylin Young, 18 years old, at Wise High School in a track team. So we really have to make some changes immediately.
There was a town hall meeting that you co-hosted along with, I believe it was the Department of Public Works. The police was also involved. Can you kind of sum up what the big concern was as it relates to the Richie Marlboro situation? I'm sure there were other things that were discussed. But as I said, prior to that, I interviewed you, and you were talking about what you hoped would come out of it. What were members of the community saying about Richie Marlboro Road leading up to Wise High?
Well, what was brought forth is that there's been complaints about this for years, almost decades. That area has had new development, quite an increase of new development. 20 years ago, most of the areas didn't have the homes that they have there now. And what's happened is that there's just more traffic on the road, and where there should be stop signs, there are no stop signs. So it's almost like almost a raceway down, which has led to a lot of accidents. I would tell you this, before the accident that happened, the leaders in the Marlboro Ridge, Marlboro Point, all of the communities around in there actually requested a meeting with me to actually address this very concern. And it's unfortunate that, they did. We set up the meeting, and now someone has died. And the frustration at the town hall was that the solutions are not immediate. So we're looking at ways if we have to legislate, because a traffic study takes about a couple months to even a year. And some people say, you know, they can't wait that long. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the concerns that we have, is moving this quickly.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Walla Blagay. She is the vice chair of the Prince George's County Council, and she represents District 6. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Jonathan, you're calling back from D.C. quickly. What's on your mind? Jonathan, are you there? Okay, we lost Jonathan. Give us a call back if you can. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking not only about public safety, but we're also talking about quality of life issues with Council Member Blagay. So if you have a comment or a question, give us a call. We are going to take a break. But when we return, we will be taking all of your calls, including Rita calling from Temple Hill. So stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back with more of this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, my guest is County Council Vice Chair and District 6 Council Member in Prince George's County, Walla Blagay. We're talking all things Prince George's County. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that has been of concern for quite some time predates your time on the council is about development. We've seen the increase in gas stations and storage units, but this is a long time conversation, but no high end shopping. My first question is, why are we seeing such a growth in gas stations and storage units in the county? My mother still lives in Lanham.
Right.
I went to visit her. Great big Royal Farms on Ardmore Road, right at Route 50. And I was like, wow. that's just me just driving in to visit. It's not the only one. What's going on with the Royal Farms gas station, for example?
So the issue is we really have a oversaturation problem, and what you have to do is legislate that. Right now, what happens is that, the zoning is basically based on, what is commercial versus residential, and that's sort of it unless you make limitations. So what happened is that the prior rules allow permitted use in commercial zones, public storage, gas stations, all of those things were permitted. But what we found is that, a lot of the shopping center owners, they need to make money. So whoever is willing to pay, they take them in. What we're asking our shopping center owners, especially for new development, is to be more thoughtful in who they bring in, because we want quality development. But what we find is that if we leave it open, they're going to, take who comes. And we find that public storage, gas stations, tobacco, so all of these things are easily coming into our community, and they want space, and the developer is going to say, come, we want you.
Do you think they should?
Well, they should. We don't agree. However, the only way to stop it is what we're doing now. That's why we put the legislation forward. And I would just say, for the People's Council, one of the things that we put forth on December 5th, we came in on December 5th, new council. And December 6th, we were the exchange of gavel. And with the new majority, the People's Council, one of the first things we said is that it's time for quality development. You can't, if you leave it to whoever owns a property, they're going to take whoever is willing to pay. So what we've got to do is make it harder. And so there are things that we feel that are oversaturation. I don't see a reason why we need a public storage in every commercial development. I don't understand that. I don't see the reason for it. I don't see why we need so many gas stations. If you look at Woodmore Town Center, which is right down the street from my community, you literally have three gas stations in one development.
You just said there's a you want to see quality development. How would you define quality development?
So what we're looking at is retail shopping, sit-down restaurants. That's what, you know, many of my community are talking about. Many of us have been hearing about the word about Blue Line Corridor. What I found, and we've actually looked into this, and if you look at the experts, quality development requires some things. It requires daytime traffic. It requires even transit helps. It requires certain things so that we can get what you want. Look at when we look at Montgomery County, they have economic centers. And that is really the bed that if you lay that bed out, that's what brings the quality development. So if you look at a Silver Spring has, they have walkable communities, but they also have restaurants. They have employers. They have daytime work that people are coming into work. They have a train station that people come out and leave. And because of that, usually that's when a lot of those higher end retail that people want to see start looking and seeing themselves there. That's what we're trying to develop in Prince George's County. We have an issue with sprawl. And that was one of the things that's not helping us. If you put a housing community at every corner, that doesn't necessarily bring the daytime traffic that you need. What we found is that over 60% of Prince Georgians work outside of Prince George's County. So if you are working out, and this was more even a bigger issue in 2019 prior to the pandemic, most people that were coming into the county, were living in the county, would leave and go to D.C., Montgomery County, Virginia. So we're not going to be able to attract those, for the high-end restaurant. They don't want to necessarily be empty in a day and have everybody show up at 6 p.m. So what we have to do is create the actual movement in the daytime. And that's why the Blue Line Corridor matters. The Blue Line Corridor builds, and this is not only Blue Line Corridor, I'll focus on that, but New Carrollton is the same. They're doing the same thing where you're bringing restaurants, you're bringing density near a metro station. The Blue Line Corridor has four big projects, and each one will go to each metro station, and that's to spur growth around it, private development around it. And that's Capitol Heights, Addison Road, Largo, and the near the stadium. What we're trying to do is attract development there, and that would be Morgan Boulevard. You put a project there, and then private development starts to come around it. And all the other incentives, making sure that we have sidewalks, making sure that we have the infrastructure for the growth that we have, and then we're going to densify those areas. Once we do that in Largo, we put the county seat in Largo. We moved a lot of our agencies to Largo, and then that should bring other development that comes near it. So then that way we have an economic center for the retail.
Council member, but if I may ask, I mean, as as someone who kind of grew up in Prince George's County, we've seen some stores, we've got strip malls that are empty. What would you say is the solution to, maybe building those up before, building new, which is not to say that the Blue Line Corridor is, a bad idea. I'm not suggesting that. But certainly everybody likes new and sparkly and shiny. But the county has not really had what would be considered, for example, upscale shopping since the folding of Garfinkel's, Woodward and Lothrop, and Raleigh's at Landover Mall. And that property remains vacant. So if you want high-end shopping, you go to Tyson's. If you want to go to Neiman's, if you want to go to Nordstrom, you go to Mazza Gallery, you go away from Prince George's County.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. We're building the economic center to bring those things there. This is not something that's going to happen overnight, unfortunately. No one is going to see a Nordstrom's pop up the next day. We are, I would say, a lot of council members, including myself, are heading to the International Retail Shopping Center conference in May. And one thing I'm going to do is be looking at at some of the higher-end retail that people have asked about. I mean, people want Trader Joe's, all of those things. Shopping. Now, I would tell you, we're in a different time where a lot of online shopping has you know, is impacting the retail centers, the brick and mortars that we're used to seeing, which are often closing down. So we're in a different time. But however, we are trying to build the actual, make the bed so that we can get the higher end retail. Now, I would tell you this. There's a bit of redlining here that is a big concern for many. And it's a reality. We are in Black communities, African-American communities, majority minority communities. And what we find is that some of the interests of those retailers in white communities are not the same in Black communities or minority communities, Hispanic communities, immigrant communities. So what we're trying to do is show, you know, when I look at Westphalia as a good example, we're looking at an area where if you look, the average income in the Westphalia sector is about $124,000. That's not a low number. That would be considered high end. And for many of us, there should be no reason why we can't get higher in retail for the retail center that's coming up in Westphalia. So, you know, but some people have said it's not going to be easy. And that's a problem, that it won't be easy when you have an average income of $124,000. So what we're trying to do is actually show the communities of color still have money to buy. They have the disposable income, especially in Prince George's County, and we want to be taken seriously. So we're building the bedrock. We're putting that. We're getting rid of the sprawl. We're building in transit-oriented communities in certain communities like a Westphalia sector, like a New Carrollton, even College Park. There's been a lot of development there. The Discovery District. Is going to be attracting a lot of tech companies there. So we have a lot of various projects in Prince George's County. So I want people to give us a chance. We're going to bring the quality retail. We're going to be pushing for it. And we're going to reach out to our community if we need help for us to actually reach out to these retailers to say, we can afford you. Come to our community.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Rita, calling from Temple Hills. Rita, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think one of the problems is most of the people that's doing this carjacking and taking people's cars is that we have an idea of where these people are living at. And I think we need some undercover police parked around in these areas so we can catch these people. So these people are going out here breaking car windows. They hit two of my cars one night. And then I broke two windows in my daughter's car, one window in my granddaughter's car. And then you got to pay all this money to try to use your insurance to repair this stuff. But the problem is happening right in the neighborhood. And down the street from me, about two blocks down the street, I have a friend live down there. They hit four cars on her street, then came back. The lady got her window fixed, came back and stole her car the next week. And we know these people are right in our neighborhoods. Every time I turn around, somebody's window is broken out in our neighborhood. Okay. And we didn't know what these living.
So, and I would say this, what we found is that what a lot of the carjackings, I kind of mentioned before, most of them are a lot of teenagers involved with that. That's our highest crime, is really property crime, breaking into cars, things like that. They're saying, you know, a good amount, and I was surprised to see a good amount of the addresses of the perpetrators that they're finding really don't live in our county. A good amount of them are in D.C. and surrounding jurisdictions. Now, that's their listed address, so we don't know where they actually live. They could live somewhere here. But we are really looking at ways to get to our youth, because that is really the highest. Those behind the carjackings are young. These are between 14, 15, to 18 years old. And so what we're trying to do is we've been working with our law enforcement community to try to see what can we do to curtail this. One of the things that the state's attorney has been working with the sheriff's office is they're looking at a Saturday Justice Academy. Sometimes it's one of those things where we have to get into our school system, get into our kids, bring their parents there. We have, you know, those that are involved with truancy, those students, you know, in certain groups, we need to actually reach them. And that's something that we're looking at from the council, is how much money should we put into programs like that. I would tell you this. I mean, they say that, you know, when they catch some of these young kids that are involved with carjackings, they call their parents. Their parents don't even show up. to pick them up. So that just, that's a sign there that tells you something. So we are definitely concerned with that. I know that there was, the, you know, you talked about the Landover,
Landover Mall site.
So I want to tell you this, the Landover Mall, I don't know if you guys have been watching, the FBI headquarters is really the biggest issue. One of the biggest development projects that we're really trying to get. And if you saw, the state's attorney has been working with our federal delegation on that. There's two sites. One is Greenbelt and one is Landover. And those are both being considered. Right now, nothing can really happen to Landover until the final decision is determined as to where the FBI headquarters is going.
So let me ask you about that, because it has been suggested that the GSA has... is trying to do the okie doke on that regarding making location close to Quantico, or as 35% of the of 35% weight in that decision. That just happened last year, but this FBI move has been discussed for years. So, Landover Mall, Greenbelt, my mother's front yard in Lanham. It doesn't matter. Are you concerned that despite all the lobbying that we've seen, you know, by the governor, the Maryland congressional delegation, the county executive, and everyone else, that it doesn't matter, that again, redlining may still be an issue with that?
Well, I would say you this, we are concerned, but we are confident in our federal delegation. We have Congressman Steny Hoyer and both Senator Van Hollen, Senator Cardin, Congressman Ivey, all have gotten together pushing, have been on Capitol Hill pushing to ensure that that we get the site. We have two sites in Prince George's County, and now the governor is pushing. So we've got everyone, all hands on deck to support that. And we hope, and we're hoping that it will pan out and that we will get that. But I would say that I do appreciate the advocacy of our delegation in making sure that they make it clear that we want this in Prince George's County, and we really need it. We realize that with a federal agency, one of the reasons, you know, the District of Columbia, there is a high crime there, even higher than Prince George's County, but they have a lot of federal buildings there, and in and around there, there's all types of quality retail around that. And if we get the FBI headquarters, that only helps us. I've put this out there, and I even talked about it during the campaign. Around 70% of our tax base, tax revenues in Prince George's County, is residential. And only about 30% is commercial. And if you go to other jurisdictions, it's flipped. And right now we're looking at a $5 billion budget that's been proposed by the county executive. You know, we have residents in our community that are complaining about, oh, D.C. has more things that, you know, support the community, support those in need than Prince George's County. Well, you're looking at a $5 billion budget versus $20 billion.
Obviously, and there's a big disparity between the two.
But it's a big disparity, but people don't know how much of a disparity at this point. You know, they've got four times what we have. And even in Montgomery County, you're looking at a $7 billion budget. We have about $5 billion budget. And we have, even though the census shows a little less than 1 million people, we're pretty sure we have more than 1 million people.
So to that point, when you were saying the tax base is residential, so, and this will be the last question I have about development, but when you talk about, for example, Westphalia, when that was first proposed, there was a lot of discussion, not just about residential single-family homes and townhouses, but there was a discussion about schools as well as shopping. So now Westphalia is here, single-family homes, townhomes, but no development for shopping. And so those, particularly in the single family homes communities where those are high income earners, if they want to go to Wegmans, they got to drive all the way up the Beltway.
Well, I hope that people came to our Westphalia town hall, because they would learn that retail is coming. And that was what we had. We had the developer.
Do you know what kind?
That was the question. That's what I wanted people to talk to the developer about, what kind. We're looking at a possible grocer shopping center, but we want the quality grocers. And what the residents of Westphalia made it clear is that they want the Whole Foods, they want the Wegmans or Harris Teeter. And that's what they, you know, they said nothing else. So I would say, for, and I've made it clear to the developer, the grocer that they bring there, very much like Wegmans, really determines what comes after it. So any of the, they have the retail space for sit down restaurants, you know, those type of things. But if we don't, if we get a Trader Joe's, if we get a Whole Foods, if we get something like that there, that changes what type of restaurants come there. And we saw that with Wilmore Town Center, that they have Copper Canyon and some of the other options that they have there. It's simply because a Wegmans is sitting there. And Wegmans, everything around it has come because of the actual name and brand of Wegmans. So we're saying the same thing for Westphalia. Now, this is where the redlining comes in. If the developer is concerned that, you know, the residents of Westphalia can't get the quality grocer that they want, that's crazy when we have the average income in the sector about $124,000.
Rita, thank you so much. I left you on the line. I apologize, but thank you so much for your phone call. Yolanda calling from Capitol Heights. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I want to thank y'all for taking my call. And I know Walla Blagay very well. Mm-hmm. I've even went out there and helped her campaign. I'm Yolanda from Capitol Heights. And a lot of the issues y'all are touching on are very important. But I'm going to say one thing before I get to the issue that I want to talk about.
Well, I need
about.
You to be quick because we're down on time. So please make a point, and I'm going to have the council member answer your question. So please go right ahead.
Okay, we need to find a way to invest in young people with the money we have.
Yolanda, unfortunately, you are breaking up. Can you hang up, give us a call back, and we'll see if we can we'll try to get to your question. I know you said something
about young people,
investing in young people.
And that's what we're doing. And, you know, we have a $2.7 billion budget that we're putting into the school system, and that's the proposed budget. Of course, the council, we're going to be looking at that budget and specifically how to support our youth. But we also are trying to increase our social services support. Like I said, the crime in our community, a lot of those property crimes are young people. So what we're trying to do is get them the services that they need. That means that we provide the social services, the mental health services. If we need violence interrupters, we're looking at that. There's a process in that to make sure that we reach our students. If we need counselors, mental health really has a big piece of it to reach a lot of our youth because many are suffering. There's something going on in their homes. Like I said, those that are involved with the crime, the parents don't even come to get them. Mm-hmm. And that tells you, that speaks volumes. Now, somebody could say, well, we could put a law to make them come. Or that's telling you something. Something's going on at their home. There's a support that those youth need. So we are definitely investing in our youth. We, even on a council level, we're looking at youth programs. There was a program, I think Councilman Barrows worked with the Park and Planning for a Saturday program for our youth. But we're looking at various programs to keep our youth busy doing different things, supporting nonprofits that support the youth. But we are really, from the People's Council's perspective, that's one of the things we talked about. How do we make sure that this budget that's been presented before us touches our youth? How do we make sure that our nonprofits that we're funding are supporting the youth? How do we make sure that in general we have actual programs that have actual results in supporting our youth? So we're doing it from the school, from the mental health, from the nonprofit area. We're trying everywhere to reach our youth because really once we reach the youth, our crime really will decrease.
One of the things that happened last week was the unanimous approval of the security camera legislation. I'm sure you remember this
right.
A mother lobbied the council to provide incentives for security cameras as well as money to help pay for subscription so that video can be stored. Of this as the result of a 13-year-old boy who was shot in his front yard while raking leaves of all things. But the question I think that came up about that was, when do you believe that money would be made available? We're talking about, what, $100,000,
$150,000? Yeah, and we're looking. The bill just passed, so, and just how it's implemented, we're Councilwoman Oriotta, and I must give her the credit, was really the biggest advocate on this. She was the lead sponsor. And we're, you know, when we're at budget time, so we make sure this bill passed so we can look at how the budget supports it. I would say this. We do realize that getting Ring cameras, getting those things is not easy for people. We're looking at a possible rebate program of some sort that will give someone an incentive to purchase them that might not have the funds to do so. And so, you know, that's what we're looking at. That's possibly what the program will look like. But right now, we don't have the clear details. We just have the money set aside and just the rebate, the program in itself, which we, you know, once we move forward, once the bill is implemented, which will be 45 days, we'll be looking at how we can actually make sure that this gets out to the community. So I would say this. We want to be able to solve crimes. Part of solving crimes is actually decreasing crime, because if you get the person off the street, that helps us. And the video, what the police have made it clear to us is that these Ring videos, videos on homes, but also videos in like apartment units and businesses and gas station really help them solve crimes. If they're able to pull those videos, and I was on a HOA meeting last night, and just how helpful the video is, and even just controlling the crime, they find that some of the perpetrators are going behind houses, because in front of houses there are all these Ring cameras. So we're even encouraging people to purchase videos behind their homes, so that you can catch them. Even if you catch them, you didn't catch them in the front, you can catch them in the back. But it does help us overall solve crime. So we are looking at other options that we could do in addition to Councilwoman Oriotta's bill that will actually help us resolve some of the crime issues in our community.
Because I think to that point, I just sat here and I just added up how much I pay for my camera front, back, and video storage a year. It's $568. For some people, you know, that's a bridge too far financially for some communities, obviously. And for others, you know, such as myself, that's a priority. Right. And so certainly the, what is it, about $300 in worth of incentive. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about $268, making it easier, and in the long run could very well, you know, help with a reduction of crime in the community. Let me go to the phone lines again. Valerie, calling from West Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I spent more than 20 years in Prince George's County. So I want to go back to the police officers and what the councilman was saying, woman was saying, in regards to getting them to join the force and incentives. The narrative used to be that higher education, you had to have so much qualification in order to be a police officer. And if you get a bump in the road, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people in Prince George's County wouldn't even try to go and fill out the application because they wouldn't want to be embarrassed. I mean, I did more than 25 years in the military, and I do know that the military actually take people with GEDs. And we all know that you don't even have to have higher education to be president of the United States. So I'm not telling you all to lower your qualifications for the Prince George's County police officers, but I think that it could at least be curtailed in the degree of, if you want someone to carry a weapon and apprehend the bad guys, then I don't think that higher education is where it stands at. I don't know if that's still the narrative, but that's the comment that I have in regard.
Well, Valerie, thank you so much. Please go right ahead.
I would say this. You know, I would say I understand that, you know, that bringing that up, we are finding that that's not quite it. We do find that, and it's been we discussed this with our law enforcement community. This is a bit of a national issue. They had more interest in the police force prior to Black Lives Matter and a lot of the national issues, and it has decreased substantially after all of this. In addition, we're finding that our some that are, you know, they said between 1 in 5 years, those that start the force don't continue, which was not an issue 20 years ago. Most that started stayed. So we are definitely looking at the solutions of how to keep them. And one of the things that we could do is there are options of incentives that would help. I would say some of the police officers also have noted that the high cost of living in the community impacts them wanting to stay where they can go elsewhere and make more money. And, you know, we do have a high cost of living in Prince George's County. So we're looking at all options, and we'll take that into consideration. But there's some things that we see now that we do know if we put some incentives there that will bring more police officers to Prince George's County. And that would help us overall. So I appreciate your suggestion.
In the minute or so that I have left, I wanted to just get your thoughts. And I asked Councilmember Oriada about this when we interviewed her as well. So I'd like your perspective. There's been this naming of the council. You called it the People's Council. What does that mean to you? And what should the constituency expect coming from that moniker?
So I would say this, and this is a bit personal to my district. I mean, one of the reasons when I started running, we were dealing with tax amendments throughout my community where Westphalia found that, you know, there had been a change in their zoning that brought an Amazon warehouse where people weren't notified and didn't agree with it. We were finding that there was a tax amendment change in near Cameron Grove off of 214 where all of a sudden there was going to be development in a place that they weren't notified. And this was also Freeway Airport. One of the reasons we actually had CB-17 pass that will stop the townhome developments on Church Road. But that actually was a part of the discussion of a tax amendment passed while the community was staunchly against it and made it clear. So people have, when I was running, people actually said, we want a council that's about us, that listens to us. And they did not feel that they were being heard. So the People's Council was actually a way to show the doors are open. We're here for people. We're going to support what you, your interests. And we put an agenda forward that we push forward on December 12th when we put the bills forward. Those oversaturation bills, the tobacco stores, the public storage, the gas station, all of those things came into response to the concerns that were brought to attention. Another thing we did was transparency in our government. People now know what bills are being passed. I'm encouraging people. I don't want to go to a hearing and see just a bunch of just some developers and their lawyers. I want to see people too. It should be everybody there. So we're encouraging people, come to the council, come to our hearings, testify. We want to hear from you.
Prince George's County Council Vice Chair and District 6 Council Member Walla Blagay, thank you so much for talking to us. We will keep listening and keep watching. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, March 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.